In a few minutes, how one man thinks his way through the recent financial market turbulence. I'm David Brancaccio in New York. You've been hearing about what President Trump said last night about more wall at the southern U.S. border, and the partial federal government shutdown remains. Here's the president last evening.
My administration is doing everything in our power to help those impacted by the situation.
Given the shutdown, we had been reporting on questions surrounding the program that helps feed tens of millions of Americans. There's word SNAP benefits, that is food stamps, can keep coming through the end of February. From Washington Marketplace, Scott Tong joins me here. Where are we with this?
Right now, we have a program that was funded through the end of January. Now, this program, just to back up, it loads money for food assistance onto debit cards every month for 38 million low-income Americans. The Agriculture Department says the spending bill that just expired allows a one-month extension, and so that's what they're invoking here in order to, as they put it, ensure that low-income Americans have access to the nutrition they need. Now, this costs about $5 billion a month, and the folks who do the math say that averages out to about $123 per person or $1.40 every meal. Now, the lower income you are, the more benefit you get, David. That's how this works.
Mm-hmm. Now, they're okay through February now with the program, but what happens if the shutdown extends after that?
There is no obvious provision to keep extending this. This so-called SNAP program is funded by annual spending bills, so it's always threatened by these standoffs. And that's different from, say, Social Security or Medicare, which go on autopilot even during a shutdown. Now, we should say that at the Agriculture Department, 95% of the workforce right now is home without pay.
Scott, thank you. Let's check markets. FTSE in London is up 1%. Dow, S&P, and NASDAQ futures are up in the 2 to 3/10 of a percent range. A new report from the American Cancer Society, the death rate from cancer is down again. It's 25th straight years of decline here, 25 of them, a 27% drop over a quarter century. Getting people not to smoke is a big part of this. Also, new drugs, some of them very expensive. Here's Marketplace's Andy Euler.
The decline in the death rate has been remarkable, says Julie Kennerly-Shaw, the assistant director of pharmacy at the James Cancer Hospital in Ohio.
The breakthroughs that we've made in oncology over the past decade really are saving lives, but certainly the cost of saving lives has increased over the last decade as well.
The worldwide market for cancer drugs is one of the biggest in pharmaceuticals, more than $120 billion a year. And cancer drugs aren't like Advil. Many can only be used to fight specific types. Kennerly Shaw says that drives up the cost in two ways.
Number one, there's less competition. But number two, it costs money to develop each of these drugs and to do clinical trials in multiple disease states.
But focusing on the cost of the drug alone is short-sighted, according to Dr. Lynn Lichtenfeld with the American Cancer Society.
It's not just about the drug. It's also about all the other associated costs. It's also the value of life and the quality of life.
In other words, treatments that allow patients to return to work and live at home are worth more than ones that require them to stay in the hospital. I'm Andy Euler for Marketplace.
How does one stay calm given the bungee dives and ballistic ascents of the stock market in recent months, and especially in recent days? Well, yoga might work. Visualizing yourself on a beach or in a verdant glade somewhere is another approach. Or we can listen to veteran money writer Alan Sloan, columnist for The Washington Post. Thanks for coming in.
Good morning, David.
First of all, I think we both should agree here. Don't obsess over the point swings in the Dow Jones Industrial Average, not the points.
Absolutely. It's exciting and fun to look at the points, but in the end, they don't really mean all that much.
Yeah. First of all, there are percentages and also other indicators like the more widely held S&P 500 index. But as people cry at their returns of last year, you've shown up with a bit of a reminder.
Yes. If you, in fact, owned an S&P index fund last year, and the S&P was down 6% and people were shrieking it was the end of the world. It turns out if you own the fund, you were down really a little over 4%.
All right. That's when you reinvest the profits in the portfolio. So maybe you didn't do quite as bad as you thought.
That's right.
All right. It's one way to look at it. Another way to look at it is to think slightly longer term. Don't just look at this miserable last year.
Right. So let's go 5 years. That's a good number. It's back when I had hair, you know. So if you had your $1,000 5 years ago, you'd have $1,501 now, of which $142 would be from dividends. I mean, that's not too shabby. And then for 10 years, which is as far back as I could get Vanguard.
Right, so 10 years ago, you put $1,000 into an S&P index fund.
Right. And at the end of last year, you had $3,425 in there, of which $639 came from dividends. I mean, that's serious money, even for an upscale guy like you.
All right. So maybe some of our listeners are feeling slightly better. But something else people want to know, Alan, is all this market volatility a canary in a coal mine pointing to a recession?
The short answer is nobody knows. For the leading economic indicators, which I think it's called, the Conference Board sits and crunches all these numbers, and there are 10 factors, one of which is the stock market. And it's not infallible. Nothing is infallible. But all of this talk of a bear market or a correction or all of these other nonsensical terms presaging a recession, well, maybe it does and maybe it doesn't. But I sure wouldn't bet my life on this telling us anything.
Alan Sloan is also editor-at-large at ProPublica. Alan, thank you.
My pleasure, David.
All right. Sears and Kmart today, still bankrupt, but the liquidators have not been called in yet. The company employs 68,000 people. Latest developments, a kind of auction is now set for Monday, a last-ditch bid to keep hundreds of stores open. Workers are also pushing the Sears chairman to set up a hardship fund to pay workers a week's pay for every year's service. Workers argue if there's money for another rescue bid, there's money for a hardship fund. In New York, I'm David Brancaccio with the Marketplace Morning Report. From APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.